Antonio was an immigrant. He came over from Italy, this country. True story. He came here, didn't speak English, came from a line of four generations of florists in Italy. So he landed here, early 20s, and because he knew the florist industry extremely well, he got a job as he learned English. Put away his money, lived with a couple of relatives, and pulled it together and saved it. And after about 3 years, he had enough money and had enough English to start his own little florist shop. So he found this little place that no one was using on the corner of a very busy intersection. And it was just the right place. Small. But he got in there, worked it up, and put up a sign, Antonio's Florist. Well, the guy was driving home one night, young, rising businessman, and he was quite pleased with himself because it was his wife's birthday. He was driving the car, and it was a busy day, but he was very pleased because last year he forgot his wife's birthday. And he really suffered for it. He couldn't wait till the year came that he could recoup everything. So he was going to recoup. He had already arranged it, worked it out with her, a fantastic dinner, a place, and a few things afterwards, and he was ready for this. So he's driving home with great kind of sense of satisfaction and delight, and boy, he was going to do this right. He pulls up to this very busy intersection, only about, you know, 5-6 minutes from the house, and all of a sudden it hits him while he's waiting at the red light. Oh no, I haven't bought a gift. I've been so caught up with what I'm doing here and getting it all set, I haven't bought a gift. Well, looks at his watch, it's 6:15, he needs to be home by 6, and what will he do? Looks around and there's a sign, Antonio's Florist. So he kind of works his way over to the turning lane and gets in there and turns and goes over and pulls up and gets out of the car and jumps in and opens the door and has a little bell that rings and Antonio, I guess that's Antonio, he's handling a customer. He's kind of nervously waiting for that customer to leave and looking at his watch, and so the customer leaves and he comes up and he says, hi, he says, you sell flowers? And Antonio says, no sell flowers. He looks around and says, I mean, all these flowers, says, you don't sell flowers? He says, no sell flowers. Well, I mean, they need some flowers, he says. Aren't these flowers? He says, sir. And then he had a big smile on his face. He says, Antonio, no sell flowers. I sell beauty. Oh, is that the same as flowers? Yeah. How can I help you, sir? Well, good. Okay. Well, I need some flowers. Oh, have many flowers, sir. What do you want? Well, my wife's birthday tonight, and I need to get some flowers to bring home. I forgot a gift, and this could be, oh, wonderful, sir. Sir, what flowers might like? Well, I've never bought any. Oh, sir. Not good. Okay, what color she like? Well, blue, she likes blue. Yellow and blue. Make lovely flower. Moment. So he goes over and gathers some blue and some yellow ones and puts them together. And he says, you like? He says, fine. How much? Moment. He goes over and then he gets some greens to kind of fill it out and add there. Makes it even prettier. And he looks at that and he says, you like, sir? He says, oh, yeah, that's great. Well, how much? Moment. You have a vase for flour. Oh, well, yeah, I just use a bottle. Oh, no, sir, no, sir. The man reaches down and pulls out this beautiful cut glass vase. He says, I don't think I can afford that. Oh, no, buy, Antonio, loan you. You take, use for flour, bring back. Why? That's a beautiful vase. Well, thank you. That's great. Sir, how you give flowers? Well, I just want to get... Oh, no, sir. You listen, Antonio, tell me. You go home, and you come into garage. You have garage. Yeah, right. Leave car there. Go in house. Wait till wife not looking. Then fill vase with water. Put flowers in. And then place somewhere she discovered it. Oh, well. A little intrigue here. Yes, okay. You have place? Well, what do you mean? Place where wife have pretty table. Place where she come and it is very nice for flowers. Oh, yeah. Right where we walk in the front, it's kind of a vestibule or a little place, and she has a little pretty table with lace. Oh, that's the place. Moving, put there, let her discover. Oh, okay, that's good. He says, well, how much? Moment. You have card? Card for money? Oh, gee, I don't think I got time to do that. Man, he pulls down, he comes out, beautiful card, with painting the flowers in front, okay. Wow, you still have your cards too? Yes, sir. You have. So he says, well, this is great. He opens it up. Yeah, it's blank. He says, it's blank. Sir, you write. What? I don't know what to write. Well, sir, what do you think of life? What she mean to you? It's my best friend. Why? I really love her. Right. Wait, starts writing. Puts it together and gives him an envelope. Now, sir, when you put these flowers on this table, put card against this vase. She discovered. Wow, this is great. So I'm going to hit the ball right out of the park here on this one. Wow. Okay. How much? He says, okay. Now I might tell you. So he paid and how he went. Well, he got home. He did it just right. Got in the garage, came back out, found out with it, walks in and says, hi, honey, I'm home. And she was upstairs in the bedroom and says, oh, I just about 5 or 6 more minutes. I'll be ready. Take your time. I got to get something out of the car and I should change my shirt anyhow. So take your time. Runs out to the garage, comes back to order the vase, everything. Gets that table, puts the vase in there, puts the flowers, fluffs it a little bit, puts the card right there, just in time as she starts to come down the stairs. And so he goes, oh, okay. And so he kind of meets her at the bottom of the stairs with her kiss. Sweetheart, I've been thinking about this evening all day. This is wonderful. Oh, me too. Well, let me change my shirt. I'll run upstairs and I'll be right back. So he runs up the stairs. He gets up to the top and he's a little out of sight and he kind of waits and hears a few footsteps and so suddenly the footsteps stop. He's listening and suddenly you hear, oh, how beautiful. He kind of pokes his head down and says, everything okay, sweetheart? He says, oh, darling. And he starts coming down the stairs and she comes up the stairs with this open envelope and this and she's there, they hug again. She says, sweetheart, did you buy these flowers and this card? He says, well, I did all this. And wow, this is unbelievable. She says, how did you know I just love these flowers? Yeah, I just knew. I love them. Anyhow, the evening was just... just phenomenal. Everything worked perfectly. The next day, he's driving back to work. And he gets to that intersection. And he kind of looks over, and Antonio's lost. It's a little before 8, and he looks at his watch. He says, "You know, I got a few minutes. I think I'll just drop by and tell Antonio I came out." So he pulls in and opens the door. The bell makes a little ding, and Antonio's way back in the forest there and on the flowers and all. He says, "Moment, moment." So he kind of works his way out. As soon as he sees him, he says, "Oh, sir, how did he go?" He says, "Oh, Antonio," he says, "it was phenomenal. It was great." He says, "Oh, details, details." So they talk for a bit. He says, "Listen, I got to go." And he said, "I'll get that Vegas back to you as soon as I can." And they say, "Oh, no problem, sir. Keep long need you need." He says, "Okay, well, this is great." So he starts walking for the door and suddenly stops. He turns around. He says, "You know, Antonio, when I came in here, remember what you said?" "Oh, what, sir?" He says, "You said, no sell flowers, sell beauty." That's really true. You really sell beauty. And I tell you, it's a long story. What do you sell?" "Well, I'm a student. I just go to class." "What are you all about? What really are you about?" "Completing the semester." "Are you like this guy that I asked in the plane? Who are you? What are you all about?" "Well, I'm an executive vice president of this big outfit." "Yes, is that what you're all about?" No. "Who are you?" "Well, I work." "Is that what you're all about?" No. You see, the reason Antonio had beautiful vases, not just a simple little cheap vase in case somebody needs it to sell it, he got the best. He wouldn't sell it because it will go on for someone else. He thought of ways to help. He even got a cards. Not with the idea, "Hey, let me get a few cards I can sell them." But beautiful cards. Probably if the guy didn't have the money with him, he probably would have said, "Take it anyhow." Why? Because he was driven to bring beauty into people's lives. Do you get it? I was visiting some NAF staff. I said, "What are you all about?" He says, "Well, we've got a bunch of Bible studies going." And, "Yes, and?" "Well, yeah, we've got some rallies. We're building up things." "Yes, and?" "Flowers. Where's the beauty? What are you after? What do you want to create? What do you want to see happen in your life? Where are you going?" "I got that semester out of the way. Come home, folks say, 'Hey, how was the semester?' 'Ah, good, did well here, the old man. End the subject, gone.' I'll tell you, I'm a dad. 4 kids. And there are 2 guys that came to want to marry my daughters. That I have invested and Phyllis has invested in for years. We've carried them like that picture had. We've done things. We've invested 18, 20, 22 years. I'm not going to just have some guy waltz in and take that daughter of mine and walk away with him. And just say, 'Well, try her out. She's neat.'" Holy mackerel. I mean, my boys have always said, "I'd hate to be the guy that's going to try to marry your daughter's dad." We had questions. "Where are you going, son?" "Well, I'm just trying to finish the semester." "Why don't you come back next semester when you've got a bigger vision to finish the semester?" "Huh? Yeah, where are you going?" "You see, I learned a long time ago that you judge people by not where they are, but where are they going? Are they thinking beauty? They may not have it all together." One guy said, "Yeah, well, after I graduated, I hope to get a job." "Yes, and?" "Yes, well, I'll get a job, and get a good job. I've done real well in school." "Great, and?" "Well, I'm not sure where it's going to lead." "Where Oh, I haven't thought of that. Well, maybe we should get some time and just let's push my daughter out of the picture. Let's focus on you. Let's talk a little bit. Let's find out. Where are you going? And if you don't know, what's down in there? And you know what? They probably had some good thinking. And they just needed some help to get it up there. Because at 20 years old, you're not going to have your life mapped out. You're just starting. But you're on a road. And you don't want to get off that road. And I want to hear from God. It's going to take my daughters. I'm on a road. And it's the road that God has for me. And I'm not sure where it is, sir. But this woman here can be part of that. And we're going to go together. And we're going to find out what God wants us to do. And we're not going to stop until we get there. What happens if you get a neat opportunity with a career and it contradicts what some of the things you want? Sir, it'll be tough. But we'll go the way God would say. Okay, I'm beginning to like what I hear. Yeah. I may take her down the aisle for you. I may say, who gives this woman to this guy? I may say, Mom and I do. Clap. Think about it. Where are you going? How are you going to get there? What is life all about? Is it just kind of, are you like one of those bumper cars in the, you know, just kind of bump along and oh, that didn't work. Boom, oh, here, then oh, try this. And just, does God play any factor in this other than go to Bible study and kind of read the Bible every once in a while? I was 18 when a guy introduced me to quiet time. Did you know the number of times I've missed a quiet time in the last almost 45 years? And the reason is I can't imagine going beyond into the day without meeting with Jesus. Without talking, without walking in, let's start discussing and kind of going after this. You see, God's forming a message in your life. And let me tell you this. Looking out where I'm looking at, talking to a lot of leaders, Christian leaders in organizations, I ask them these kind of questions. Some of them don't know what they're all about. Well, they wrote something. But I've asked them, when was the last time you had a vision? You had some beauty in your mind? I guess it's been a while. You ever talk to God about it? Well, I'm just so busy. Well, when you look at people, you see, God's forming a message in your life. And that message is going to start leaking out all along the way. More in your 20s, more in your 30s, more in your 40s. It's a message. If I poke you and talk to you more than 10 minutes and keep asking you different questions, it's going to come out. You can't help it. It just comes. It builds. Now, I find this. The people who make impacts in this world. Maybe no books are going to write them. Have a message. And they give that message wherever they go. And it's forming in you. And so what I'd like to do in just a little bit of time I have left is just show you a couple things. One is this. Just give you some big ideas. And we'll see what we can do. Whoops. Is that working? Yeah. Whoop, it's sliding towards the belief. Thanks. You see, most of life is made up of, you know, accumulation of things. Can you imagine David? David gets called in, you know, remember, Samuel came to anoint the new king. Went through all these good-looking brothers. And finally, God says to Samuel, he's not the one. None of these so far. Yeah, they're great. They have good statistics, and their hardware is really sharp. They've been there, done that. They've got it. But I'm looking at the heart, and none of these guys have it. Is there anybody more? Well, yeah, a little 16-year-old son. He's out there taking care of the sheep. Bring him in. They bring him in. And you can imagine, here's little Samuel. I mean, what am I here for? Here's David. David is you know, a lion. There's others before him. He's never thought he'd ever inherit anything. And he steps up because of something going on in his life while he's out there with the sheep. He talks to God. He meets with God. And so here he is. He shows up. You know, they probably clean him up a little bit. That's the guy. Man looks on the outward appearance, 1 Samuel 16:7. Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. He's the one. He gets anointed. All his brothers are around. I mean, you think, wow, this is the moment. Stand back. What is the next thing that happens to his life? What happens? Did a chariot suddenly come in? Put a robe on him and say, sir, next stop, palace. No. It was like kind of after it was over, everybody kind of fiddled away and he still had his oil on his head. And somebody said, well, who's watching your sheep? Oh, gee, yeah, I better get back. And he goes back. He said, God, what was that all about? I mean, other than oiling my hair, and now I'm all greasy and I don't look very good, so I'll have to wash it, but here I am. And see, life is like that. When God starts speaking into your heart, it isn't going to happen right away. You don't usher Him directly right into the throne room at 16 years of age. Why? Why? What needs to happen? Yeah, I can just feel your thinking. What needs to happen? He's got to mature. He's got to become like Jesus. If God's going to use him, he wants to build him. And God will build him. God will build him. But he will have a part. And so, he continues on. And his life wasn't so easy. Remember? Goes out and wins some battles and plays the harp and does a bunch of things. And the people love him, but Saul hates him. Saul is jealous. And Saul had no idea that he was going to be the instrument in David's life that was going to shape it. Ever have one of those experiences? You get a roommate? We're praying for a roommate. I know with all four of our kids, when they went away to college, they didn't have a chance to sign up for one and hope it's a Christian, hope it's this. We just prayed. So they showed up, and this one guy, my first son, as a daughter as well, they got one. I said, well, hey, how's your roommate we've been praying for? Oh boy, Dad, I'm going to try to get rid of her. Wait a minute. We prayed, asked God, and she showed up. Yeah. Is that from God? Yeah. So God is going to use her in your life. He's going to teach you how to love people who aren't lovable. He's going to teach you some things that David learned by having a man trying to get his life. And he's going to spend 10, 12 years avoiding a pursuing, raving king who lies and says, oh, forgive me, I shouldn't have done that, and then the next day he's after me again. God's preparing his life, because the road to preparation is not road to go to this course, then go to seminary, go here. Seminary never made anybody godly. No, it helped their head. Just like MBAs don't make great businessmen. Give you some knowledge. That's all it gives you. You'll learn out in the tough stuff. God shapes you. So, here is what he's doing. What happens is, see, most of us, we have beliefs. They come from the mind, you know? The mind, what we think, what's important to us. Our heart, what we believe, what's really important to us. I got this one quote
let's see, I'll think long enough to find out exactly who said it, but he said, when it comes to assessing a person's godliness, don't look at what they do. Look and find out what they love. You see, what you love, you'll do. Matthew 22:37. The greatest commandment, Jesus said, it was asked, what is the greatest commandment? You know it. It says, to love the Lord your God with what? All your heart. All your strength. All your mind. All of it. And that's what it is. That'll affect you. And that becomes something. And so, what happens is, though, we look out here and we see some good behavior. We see people doing it. Hey, the cool Christians go to the NAS or Crusade or something. And the cool Christians, the guys that seem to be serious, they go to Bible studies, so I'll go to Bible studies, and they do this. And we begin to conform to what is the right thing. But you see, what Jesus did with the disciples is when he got them, he didn't teach them conforming, but he worked at transforming. Transforming. Romans 12:2 says what? What does it tell us about the mind? It says, don't conform to this world, but be transformed by the what? By the changing of a course? By taking on something else or doing Bible things? No, it says be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Get your mind around God's mind. Let God begin to affect how you think. You can only do that when you spend lots of time in the Scriptures. To get the mind of God. Not to just please somebody or just show up with us done, but get the mind of God. But you also get the heart of God in the Scriptures. And so we get this. And so what he is interested in doing, because belief influences our values, our motives, our attitudes, and that's where most of the decisions come from. So we make our choices. And then our choices, of course, lead to just actions and behaviors. So what's happening here in you and me is that God is constantly at work. Now, just think for a moment. We can watch people's behavior, for instance, and if we watch long enough, we can kind of work back and figure out what's important to them. And then we watch them enough, we can go all the way back to finding out what's really their beliefs. Your beliefs will come out through your actions. So let's look at Antonio. Antonio, we saw the actions he did, the things we just talked about. What kind of values do you think he had? Do you think he was caught up with money? No. What was he caught up with? I mean, there's no right or wrong answer here. What do you think he was caught up with? Helping people experience beauty. And I bet he had a pretty good definition of beauty. He just wanted them to see beauty. He wanted to make it, you know, make them delighted. Make their occasions more. He wasn't a believer that I know of. But you see, for us, and so we say, for instance, well, one of the things I want to do is really love God. Well, that's the horizontal. But then 1 John 4 says, if you love God, you'll love your neighbor. Do you love your neighbor? Who is your neighbor? They asked him. Well, my definition is, these are the people who are in my life. These are all the people in my life. Christians, non-Christians, whatever. And so, I was talking to this one fellow who was telling me, he said, you know, I can't get along with him. He says, we're not on the same frequency as far as I'm concerned. I just don't get involved with him. I said, so, you don't love God? He says, no, I just have a problem with this guy and he's not for me. We don't click, so he's out. And he's your roommate? Yeah, but we just kind of tolerate each other. So you don't love God? He says, what do you mean not love God? Yeah, I love God. So we went to 1 John 4 and said, if you love me, you will love my brothers. You will love people. You see, you can't get away from it. And so God has that guy with this other roommate because this guy's seeking to love God, but he's saying, listen, if you want to love God, you better love your roommate. Yeah, but you don't know my roommate. That's right. I don't know your roommate. But God wants you to love him. See, you don't have to like him. The Bible says you got to love him. And so these are the kinds of things that God is working. And it's that here that you need to get it in. Get it right. Get it with God. Start putting that into your life. And that begins to influence what you value. What motivates you. Attitude. I was with a group, a very excellent leadership training center. And I was asking them, what is the classroom? What role does the classroom play in developing things that can't be taught in classrooms?
Well, what do you mean?
I said, like attitude. Can you teach attitude in the classroom?
No.
Can you teach thankfulness in the classroom?
No.
You see, none of those we were born with. You know, when you have a little three-year-old, you give him a treat, and he finishes the treat and goes, more, more. We say no, and he wants to cry. So we give him more. Does this train him in thankfulness? Does he suddenly say, oh, no, I've had enough, Mom, and probably more than I need, and you probably want to save this for other people. And just thanks, Mom, for that great cookie. It just was great. But what does he want if you give it to him again? What does he do? Wants more. More, more. And that little illustration can be applied all over your campus, right? If things I like, give me more, man. Oh, no, stop. No. Share it with other people, please. That's taught. That's learned. That's learned through situations, and unfortunately most situations are tough situations we learn. It's easy to say thank you to a wonderful person who's just done a wonderful thing for you. We've all learned to be polite. But like someone once told me, the real test of a servant is when you get treated like one. And I've had that experience. Have you? Yeah, I walked into a situation and I was supposed to be the speaker at this big conference in this big place, and I was over in Amsterdam, and I show up and I'm looking in the room where I was going to have my sessions and all the rest, and this guy comes up to me and I say, hey, can I help you? And I didn't have any of my name tags on, and matter of fact, the name tag they gave me, it says speaker, seminar giver, you know, a kind of ribbon underneath, and I just left it in my room, and I went down there and I checked, and here's this guy. You know, I say to him, hey, it looks like you haven't even got the chairs up, and there are 1,000 people going to be here. Are you guys going to make it? And he said, no. He said, we could really use a help. He said, this YWAM group is supposed to be sending about 50 kids here, and we're supposed to get 10 up to set this up, and they're not here. Something happened to their bus, and yeah, we're running behind. We're going to be in duct tape. And I said, well, can I help you? Now, I was, honestly, as I look back, what I was thinking when I said, can I help you, is there somebody high up I can call and tell him to get, you know, somebody down here? I mean, I only saw that last, after. But he didn't recognize that. And I didn't have my wonderful name tag. He says, well, if you can set up some chairs. Oh, I wasn't thinking of that, but you have a phone around here. He says, well, we've already called everybody. No help. Everybody's strapped. Everybody's gone. 4,000 people coming. Helping chairs. Okay. Okay, I've put up a few chairs. I could probably. So how many chairs? Well, 800, you know, 400 on each side, aisle down the middle. And none of you, no, we got to get the audio in, we're putting all this other stuff, and then we've got to get to this other place. And okay. So he says, yeah, over there are those big racks, there are 100 in each one of the racks. They're on wheels, you can pull them out. Wheels pull out. Okay. I have to honestly tell you, there's a couple of times I thought, where is that name tag? Well, then, so when I started to put some of the chairs down, get them in a line, and he prepped me two or three times before he left. He says, no, you got to have 12 across. Have them there. See those little tapes we set up there? He didn't say, you idiot, but he meant it. And he said, you know, just like, I said, hey, you know, you got to take the help you can get, right? He says, yeah, that's right. So I started to go, well, I'm thinking. This is what I'm thinking. someday I'll be able to tell people this illustration, how much I serve. I mean, I've only put up a couple rows, but I am just kind of ticked off. I could be back reviewing my notes. I could do a lot of things. So I'm just kind of putting these things in. So I get to be 3 rows, 6 rows. Before you know it, about 40 minutes, all 400 are there. Nobody showed up. So I pulled them over and I started in the second. And I started putting them down. All of a sudden, I'm kind of moving from complaining to figuring out how I can leverage this for some great things. I'm just saying, you know, this is all about you and me, isn't it, God? And there was no voice, but he said, yeah, it is, Paul. And your doing this is a blessing to me. Because you're my servant, not theirs. And what you're doing is for my sake. Lord, boy, would you forgive me? So I start, you know, getting tears in my eyes, just realizing how ungrateful I've been. Oh, I've done servant things. But I said, you know, I'm doing it here and nobody's even here to notice. I mean, at least if I'm going to do it, let me get some credit for it. So it's like the guy who, the offering basket comes on church in the morning and he suddenly sees it coming down. He goes, oh, gee, I better. He pulls it out and he thinks he's got 3 ones. And just as he throws the 3 ones in, he realizes that one of those is a 20. And he goes, what? And of course he couldn't reach it and grab it back. So the theologians say, does he get credit for $3 or $22 up in heaven? Now you guys could think about that. The theologians really worked on that. So what did he really get? Because the intent was really for three. But no, what happened was, my intent was so bad. And so I get halfway through this second 400 and I get going fast. Because I'm saying, listen, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do the whole thing. Lord, hold them off. Keep that YWAM bus stuck. And so I started to finish. I got to a finish. It took me just a little over an hour. And then I'm ready to leave. And I'm starting to walk out. And just as I'm starting to walk out, feeling a tremendous sense, spiritually, it was all about the spiritual issue. It had nothing to do with the bus. I mean, God was doing work in me. I was talking to God. I was asking for forgiveness. I was just delighting, and I could see him up there just saying, well done, my good and faithful servant. And I thought, this is one of the first times I've ever served in total hiddenness. And then there I am, and I'm doing this, and I'm just ready to leave, and this crew comes back with that guy, just came back to check it out. He says, hey, I can't believe you've done the whole thing. Who are you? Well, come by tonight, I'm speaking. No. I went out and said, a servant of the living God, and walked out. And have you ever seen anybody levitate? I went 3 feet off the ground all the way back. I felt the delight of God. You see, this is how he teaches us to be a servant. Not necessarily through a Bible study. It's the application of truth. It's not knowledge that will change your life. It's truth embraced. And as God reveals truth to you through any person around you or through the scriptures as you study the Bible, and as you embrace truth, you will become like Christ. You will grow. And so we have God's part. He's orchestrating events and he's doing things and he's putting things together. He's watching all the time. And then he's watching, however, and helping you in your response. Response is everything. Response is everything. It's how you respond to a situation. Situations and stresses and crises do not develop you. It's your response to them. What you learn and how you respond, that's what develops you. And so, we have our part. And God puts people, events, and circumstances into our life. And as we do, and as we live through those people, events, and circumstances, as we embrace them and continue to stay with Him, keeping in the Word, keeping in prayer, He begins to form a whole new heart and way of thinking that will form this, will form that. And that's the message I have for you this morning. Let's pray. Father, it's a wonderful thing to trust the Lord. It's a wonderful thing to walk with You. And Lord, we talked about last night that we were not going to see ourselves as purposeless because You made us for a purpose. And although, like with David, he didn't know exactly all that You were drawing him into and exactly where it was all going when he was anointed as a young teenager, but he stayed faithful. He continued to walk with You, seek You, know Your Word, pray. And You began to walk through and gave him victories, wonderful victories. He killed his 10,000s, more than Saul. And simply by living his life out, it became a rebuke to Saul. And Saul hated him. But You knew that. You knew that. You used Saul as a tool to make David what he became. And so, when You gave testimony to David in Acts 13, verse 22 said, "And God said this about David, that his heart was totally committed to Me. He was after My heart. Yes, he failed, he sinned, but he immediately came back to us, came back to Me. His heart, he wanted to love Me with all his heart. And then he'll do anything I ask him to do. Anything I ask him to do." What a testimony to have from God about us. So Father, You're shaping that in us. Help us to learn what our part is. And our part won't get us there. It's Your part is the bigger part. You're orchestrating events and circumstances and people in our life, and some we like and some we don't. But all of them are for us and our growth, that we might recognize truth as it applies to that situation, that it applies to that relationship, and change as we embrace it. So Lord, would You work in us all, that we might become like Jesus Christ. Think like Him, love like Him, serve like Him.